My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends, I was trying to make some money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate, teach, put it in context. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Welcome to Bizarro Land, where up is down, down is up, and good is bad. Thanks to the magic of the Federal Reserve, we've entered a market right now where bad news for the economy is actually good news for stocks, which is why the Dow rallied 207 points today. S&P gained 0.82%. NASDAQ climbed 0.64%. You know, for the better part of the decade, we've had a relatively straightforward market. As we climbed out of the Great Recession, good news about the economy was good news for stocks. Even when the Fed started tightening, the bulls still wanted business to stay strong. You rarely heard people say, what we really need now is a lousy jobs number to force the Fed to stop raising rates. But that all changed yesterday. It's one of the reasons why I was up 500 yesterday, and I'll get up 207 today. Yesterday, when Fed Chief Jay Powell told us he's watching the economy and would take action if it gets too weak. In other words, if business slows down, Powell's indicating he's prepared to slam on the accelerator with a rate cut. Suddenly, the bulls are rooting for the economy to fail. Because the worse the data gets, the more likely it is that the Fed, well, slashes rates. And that's how we could rally today on a very weak payroll report from Automatic Data Processing this morning. They do this thing, comes out a couple days before the actual number on Friday. It's why investors cheered slow housing sales. They're even cheering weak auto sales. I know this can be confusing to you. It can also be infuriating. We're supposed to cheer for people getting laid off? What kind of market's that? What kind of world is that? Now, 2 days ago, that ADP number would have actually been terrifying. Now it's encouraging? I mean, how the heck are we supposed to keep track? Maybe you think the market's completely nuts. It's not. It's not. See, because now we're on the other side of an interest rate cycle. The Fed tightened too much in December. The economy slowed down. The bulls are praying that we get more ugly data to convince Powell to give us a rate cut now. That's why I always call it Bizarro World, because in Bizarro World, everything's backwards. Now, you don't need to read DC Comics to know what I'm talking about here. You just need to watch that one episode of Seinfeld. It's season 8, by the way, episode 3. Google it. Watch it, for heaven's sake. Now, any weak data is a positive, and anything strong is a nightmare. Because if the economy stays even lukewarm, the Fed won't give us those much-prayed-for rate cuts. And that's why the averages were today when that ADP gave us a terrible number, which suggests that the Labor Department's non-farm payroll report on Friday could also be disappointing. Yay! It's why stocks took a breather when the Fed released its beige book, showing decent growth across most of the country. That said, I wouldn't take your cue from that beige book because it really doesn't do a very good job of gauging the state of the economy. Sorry. So what gives you a better read of things? I'm going to fill you in right here, right now, so you know exactly what's going on in Bizarro World. First, it's oil. For years, stocks would rally whenever oil went higher, because it was viewed as a proxy for the health of the economy. Well, that's still true. But now the bulls want a weaker economy because of Powell. So lower oil prices like we had today are good news for stocks. When the price of crude gets clobbered like this, it justifies a rate cut. The bulls don't care whether oil's going down because of excess supply, even though I believe that's the case. You know what? I keep thinking about that interview we have with Scott Sheffield, the dean of oil CEOs. He's a pioneer in that, who told us that the Permian Basin is producing an amazing amount of oil right now. Roughly a decade ago, when the U.S. was producing 6 barrels a day, Sheffield came on this show and told us we'd double that number by the turn of the decade. No one believed him. Well, sure enough, the U.S. now produces 12 million barrels a day. And Sheffield predicts that soon will go to 17 million. No one's predicting that. But the oil market's reflecting that. And if it happened, it will wreck the oil market right here, right now. Even as we're thinking that we're so far away from it, it doesn't work like that. It foresees this. And oil, by the way, has already entered a bear market. It's now down more than 20% from the April highs. So that's good. In other words, don't own the fossil fuels, please. The millennials don't like those stocks. In other words, it probably is not done going down, because there's less demand from a slower economy. It's being hit by a supply glut, too. But the bulls don't care. For them, it's all about plummeting oil prices as an exhibit of why the Fed must cut rates, because it says the economy is weak. Exhibit B, our friends, the tariffs. The president might be very sanguine about these tariffs. He keeps slapping on China and now Mexico. But, that happens on Monday. And we know that there's long meetings and, whatever. Fine. But the Federal Reserve feels differently. Our central bank is worried that the tariffs are slowing our economy. They're making executives pull in their horns and cause consumers to hoard cash. For example, take this 5% tariff on goods from Mexico that could go into effect on Monday and could rise to 25% if they can't hammer out a deal with the White House. Jay Powell is concerned that this will hurt consumption because it's basically a big sales tax on everything we ship from Mexico, which includes millions of cars. Now, the president doesn't see any negatives here. He can use our commerce to bludgeon Mexico into paying for something like a border wall. And in the meantime, U.S.-based manufacturers will get a leg up versus Mexican-based manufacturers. What's the matter with that? However, the Fed knows that consumers are ultimately the ones who pay for these tariffs, and they're terrified of Trump's trade war. Finally, there's our friends in the bond market. The yield on the 10-year Treasury has collapsed. It's now at 2.135 as of tonight. That's lower than the Fed funds rate, shortest of short-term rates set up by the Fed. Now, when you see that, you have what's known as an inverted yield curve. Really boring, but it's a sign that the Fed was way too aggressive with its rate hikes last year. Hey, Jay, mea culpa, pal, partner. Jay Powell knows that an inverted yield curve is a bad sign for the economy. It always is. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. He doesn't want to cause a recession. Bummer. But the ultra-low yield on the 10-year tells us there's a real lack of demand for money. Companies aren't borrowing for construction. People aren't borrowing for mortgages. And that's why Powell started talking about the possibility of a rate cut yesterday. Many people are expecting him to start easing by July. I think that's getting ahead of themselves. It's just too much of a U-turn versus Powell's position at the end of last year when he was still convinced that we needed a series of rate hikes to stamp out inflation. Wrong. Look, I hope I'm mistaken. I would love a rate cut next month, but hope should not be part of the equation. When you use this framework, though, you can see how every day people are making bets that we're going to have a recession. And that's why the consumer packaged goods stocks have had huge moves. Look at PepsiCo. Wow, what a horse. Kimberly-Clark, they're not even doing that well. Hershey, they can do just fine during a slowdown. In fact, better than fine, because we're getting lower commodity prices, and they may even benefit from recession. It would save them a fortune on packaging and fuel costs. Meanwhile, the secular growth stocks keep climbing and climbing and climbing for the same reason. They don't need a strong economy either, hence the strength in Salesforce last night and Adobe. How about that Okta? Google that. OKT. I just like to say it. Okta. I like to say Zscaler. If we're in a deflationary environment, their future earnings growth looks a lot more attractive, provided they can keep making the numbers. And I think they can. Here's the bottom line, people. Make no mistake. From now on, after yesterday, bad news is good news. As tariffs go up, while oil prices and bond yields go down, the Fed has more and more reason to cut rates. Given that the president has endlessly pressured Jay Powell to cut, he needs some cover before he can take action. Otherwise, he'll look like a puppet. And the only thing that gives the Fed cover is a slower economy. Good thing, because that's exactly what we're getting. Zoe in North Carolina. Zoe!
Hello, Jim. This is her grandfather, Nathan, and I'm here with my three grandchildren, Nathan, Abby, and Zoe, and I'm going to give you Zoe, if you don't mind.
Hey, Zoe, how you been?
Hello, my name is Zoe Keaton. I am 10 years old, and I am from Asheville, North Carolina.
Pretty.
I'm investing with my grandfather for college. I was wondering about waste management.
Well, you got horse sense, my friend. I think that's a great stock to own, Zoe. I think Fish is doing a good job. Someone at thestreet.com just did an interview with them. And it is two thumbs up. Good call. I love families who watch together. You know what? Why don't we go to Lee in Virginia? Lee.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
As a long-time viewer, I know one of your cardinal rules is accounting issues equal sell. Shortly after the IPO of Jumia Technologies, a short seller issued a report claiming that the prospectus contained inaccurate statements and that Jumia had changed some of its metrics, so the stock tanked.
Yes.
Is this a situation where we should just sell, or is it a buying opportunity?
Well, I mean, it's tough because they stand by the disclosures in the prospectus, but I don't really care for the company. I got so many other stocks that I really, really like in that sector. Why do I have to go down and deal with a company that actually was so easy to attack? You want e-commerce platform, you buy Shopify. Ron in Maryland. Ron.
Hey, Jim. Booyah, booyah. First-time caller and long-time listener.
Fantastic. What's up?
I hold a position with TLRD, and really? it pays a dividend. The stock has been down before the tariffs,
yeah.
And I don't know which direction this stock is going. Should I sell, hold, or buy?
Well, one thing that my staff has learned that I think is really a terrific lesson even my friend Frack, who's back here just for a couple of guest appearances, which is that stocks do stop at zero. It's a remarkable thing. It keeps you from really hurting yourself. I don't know what else to say. All right, Week Economic News is now a market positive. Strong data? Oh, no, we don't like that anymore.
House of pain.
The Fed needs reasons to cut rates because the president's been pressuring those guys forever. Hey, by the way, on Mad Money Tonight, a new under-the-radar fintech play that you're really going to want to invest in. I'll reveal the name just ahead. Then, thinking about cleaning out old Mad Money episodes from your DVR or your Betamax? Think again. I'll tell you why it could hold the key to your portfolio potential. And it's a company transforming the way organizations make business decisions, and the stock is up more than 60% this year. Is it time to make a plan to add Anaplan, a man, a plan, a bull market to your portfolio? I've got the CEO, so I would stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag mad tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Now that everyone suddenly feels very comfortable with the market, after a couple of really bad weeks making five, I want to highlight a group that's done incredibly well during what's a pretty volatile period. I'm talking about the financial technology stocks, or fintech for short, which a lot of people, by the way, think are rolling over. The chartists don't like them. Well, isn't this an interesting time to discuss it then? This is a cohort that tends to thrive when investors are worried about the economy and nobody feels safe owning traditional financials. They were good for one day yesterday, and then they're back to their old bad ways. If the banks feel too risky with an inverted yield curve, you buy the fintechs. Some of these financial technology plans have a lot of sex appeal. Wow, get this. PayPal, Square, how can you miss those, right? Hey, some of them are iconic. Visa, MasterCard. Chapel Trust owns MasterCard. But others are relatively boring and unknown. But it hasn't stopped their stocks from roaring higher, even as what they sound like they do isn't particularly sexy. I want you to take a look at FleetCore Technologies. FLT for you home gamers. This is a payments company, so they're for fintech, that handles gasoline pay cards, they're called, toll, lodging expenses, general accounts payable. They're mainly focused on business-to-business transactions. Basically, FleetCore gives you a better, more efficient way to transfer money from company to company. So if your business employs hundreds of, say, drivers, you give each one a FleetCore card to pay for gas. That's their largest division. The company operates in more than 80 countries, although 88% of their sales come from the United States, Brazil, and United Kingdom. Now, the business-to-business payment space might be a terrific place to make money, but it's not what anyone would call exciting. Hey, it doesn't matter, people. The market can't get enough fintech, even if it's boring fintech. And remember, there's so much merger activity in this space that people just say, hey, listen, give me a fintech. I'll buy it. It's one reason why FleetCore has been one of the hottest stocks of 2019. It is up 35% year-to-date, which puts it among the 30 best performers in the S&P 500. Last night, it was number 27. How the heck did that happen to a company that makes cards for gasoline? Well, some of it has to do with the Wall Street fashion show, but a lot of it's company-specific. See, when FleetCore came public at the end of 2010, it was a $23 stock. It's now a $251 stock. That means it's up nearly 1,000%. I recommended it back in 2014 because I felt it was pretty good. I had it for the charitable trust, but I wish I had been more aggressive about circling back to it. The secret to FleetCore's success, it's what's known as a roll-up. Since 2002, they've acquired 75 companies in commercial account portfolios. Basically, FleetCore has executed a terrific takeover strategy, making itself the largest player in the field, something that really matters in the payments business where scale is incredibly important, hence all the acquisitions and takeovers in the sector. They've expanded from a purveyor of fleet cards for handling fuel payments to a larger, more diversified play on tolls, lodging, and more general corporate transactions. Land and expand. At the end of the day, the payments industry represents a fabulous long-term growth story. So, of course, a company that keeps acquiring other payment plays is going to be a huge winner. And that's exactly what we've seen here. FleetCore is all about the transition from paper to plastic. Something like half of all business-to-business transactions are still done via check. Which means the companies involved need to hire a bunch of people to write the checks and mail them and collect them from clients and then deposit them on the other end. Oh, man, That is just a huge waste of time and money. The idea behind FleetCor is that you can lay off all those people and save yourself a lot of money. It's a great story. And that's part of the reason why the stock's been such an excellent performer. Even as it's pulled back about 25 bucks from its highs over the past couple weeks. Remember, I told you the Chartists are saying it's rolling over. When FleetCor reported its latest quarter roughly a month ago, the company delivered a nice top and bottom line beat. 11% organic revenue growth. Remember, it's so hard to find double digit in this market. Even better, management raised their full year sales and earnings forecast. Beat and raise. How did they do it? You need to view these payment companies as fighting among themselves for a larger and larger piece of the transaction pie. FleetCor gets a bigger slice by making acquisitions, but it also has the ways of growing the business organically. For example, they've got thousands upon thousands of fuel cards out there right now. They're letting customers use them for other kinds of spending, so your FleetCor becomes more like an expense account. See? They're doing the same thing with toll cards in Brazil, their second largest market. They're expanding the number of hotels that take their lodging cards from 15,000 going to 25,000. And they're making a big push into more general corporate payments, helping businesses conduct all of their transactions electronically. Remember, paper to plastic. So is FleetCor worth buying here right now? I like the fintech space. You know that. I like this company in particular. But let me just give you a little bit of caution here. The thing is, FleetCor is highly levered to certain kinds of transactions. Remember, the customers are companies with employees that drive trucks, pay for toll roads, and generally travel for business. They take a tiny little cut of these transactions. But this is all stuff that's much better when the global economy's humming, which we know it isn't. Thank you, Fed. When there's a downturn, you have less shipping and you have less business travel, and FleetCor's payments network is going to have incrementally less activity. The most obvious example here is fuel prices, right? FleetCor gets 45% of its revenue from its fuel card business. So when the price of gasoline goes down, like right now because the price of oil is swooning, there's less money being made and paid through FleetCor's fuel network. Oh, there's also this strong dollar. I could bore you every night with that thing. It gets 40% of its sales from overseas, including 16.4% from Brazil, which has a particularly volatile currency, and 10.6% from the UK, which is Brexit stasis, whatever the heck is going on over there. If you think the dollar will stay strong, it's going to keep pressuring the earnings. Now, so far, FleetCor has been able to thrive in spite of these issues. I bring them up because every time the stock has gotten hammered in recent years, it happened when oil prices were coming down. But let me give you the other side of the trade. Goldman Sachs just gave FleetCor a nice upgrade this morning from neutral to buy, raising their price target to 305, which would certainly be nice upside stocks at 251. Goldman likes the secular growth opportunity in payments just like we do. They like FleetCor's terrific execution like we do. They like that the company's poised to keep rolling up the industry with smart acquisitions, yes, like we do. My view. FleetCor is a superb long-term story, and the fintech stocks are very hot. The stock could pull back a little more. I think you have to be prepared to buy it on the way down, particularly if the price of oil keeps falling. With the stock trading at just 19 times next year's earnings estimates, it is pretty darn cheap. It is right. Bottom line, FleetCor is a lousy trade, but it could be a terrific investment as long as you approach it patiently. The payments industry is just too good to ignore here. And every time these stocks go down, whether it be a Visa, whether it be a MasterCard, whether it be a Square, whether it be a PayPal, or whether it be a FleetCor, it has paid to
buy
the stock. Leslie in Michigan. Leslie.
Hi, Jim. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, no problem.
My concern is with the outlook for Square. I purchased shares last fall at $88 a share. Mm-hmm. Since then, the shares have declined with the broader tech market, and they do have the cash app and credit card usage
right
on its side. So, given their strengths versus the impending tech antitrust investigations, should I hold by
itself? Yeah, I want you to hold. I mean, this stock peaked, by the way, just so we're clear. It peaked when the fabulous, amazing, unbelievable Sarah Friar left to go to a really good site that my wife is addicted to, this Nextdoor. And that's what caused the stock to peak. But I do like Square very much. I like PayPal even more. That's Dan Schulman. I'm seeing him tomorrow for corporate governance conference that I'm leading. All right, FleetCor has a fabulous long-term growth story, but it's sensitive to oil prices. That's why I think you should buy it gradually as oil remains under pressure. I think oil is not going to have that more downside, so this one may be ripe for an opportunity. Hey, it could be terrific. Now, much more Mad Money. When an executive comes on the air here, oh, I know it's easy to be dismissive. Some of you even turn it off. Some of you cut the cord by Roku. But I'm going to tell you why you should check the cynicism at the door. Then Anaplan soared nearly 20% after reporting last week. And boy, I've been behind that one since it came public. We're going to talk to the CEO. He used to be CFO at Red Hat and Cisco. And their big issue is haunting big tech, right? But why is Salesforce above the fray? Why is that stock up 7? I'll give you my take. Stay with Craig. to be a great investor, you can only be, afford to be so cynical. When executives come on the air, it's easy to be dismissive. Oh, they're just talking their book. But you need to strike a balance between skepticism and credulity, because many CEOs deserve the benefit of the doubt, and you ignore them at your own peril. That's why I do so many CEO interviews on Mad Money. Nobody knows more about how a company's doing than the people who are running that company. When you have a chance to hear from them firsthand, it can be incredibly lucrative. You don't have to take my word for it. I'm going to give you some real examples right now. Back in January, for instance, I spoke to Omar Ishrak. He's the CEO of Medtronic, MDT, the gigantic medical device company. Medtronic stock had just been hammered the day before, down 6% after the company trimmed its full-year forecast. But it was mostly because of higher taxes and the strong dollar, not the fundamentals. The analysts were not amused, and they ripped this thing to shreds. So the next day, I gave Ishrak a chance to defend himself. Take a look. Are those adequate descriptions of what you said yesterday?
Not at all. Look, I've said it before and I'll say it over and over again. We stand with the strongest pipeline that we've ever had in this company across its breadth, and we do certain things with technology. We innovate, we create new markets, and we disrupt our own markets. And we've got that across a breadth of technologies that we've never had before and no one else has. And we think these are game changers for healthcare, and we'll be in the middle of that.
All right. I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound like a company that's having problems. So many of the analysts seem to indicate that was that J.P. Morgan conference, and boy, they just hated what he had to say. At the conference, Medtronic wanted to tell a story about that incredible pipeline of new products that Omar mentioned. But the analysts only cared about this stupid tax issue. They practically hijacked the presentation. However, if you listen to our interview, Ishrak told you all about the new products. For instance, the micro pacemaker, smallest in the world, currently can be used for 16% of the total addressable population. That's going to 60% among, and how about the Mazor Robotics acquisition? So many of you like that stock, Israeli company, which gives Medtronic exposure to advanced systems that help doctors conduct minimally invasive spinal surgery. They've combined their surgical planning software with Mazor's to create a whole new product. Hey, he told us about a new chip Medtronic is working on, something that can implant in your brain. Thank you. I've been doing it 14 years. I can sneeze all I want. And it helps people with movement disorders and Parkinson's. I've looked into that one in particular, and it's really kind of, let's say fantastic voyage. We weren't fed up like the analysts. We thought they were way too negative. They were way too cynical. We weren't. We were wondrous. As for the tax issue, Ishrak explained he was just being careful by disclosing a potential problem that everybody seized on, and that it might not even turn out to be a real problem at all. You know what this was? This was classic UPOD that I tried to teach you. Under promise and over deliver. Now, if you listened to the analysts, you would have sold Medtronic. You would have absolutely dumped it. They were negative.
Sell.
But if you listened to our interview, you know what? You had a very good case to
buy.
The darn thing. Sure enough, when the company reported in February, they shot the lights out. They raised their full-year earnings guidance. The number those analysts were so worried about, the guidance was terrific. Then in March, Medtronic added $6 billion to its buyback authorization. Clearly, management believed the stock was too cheap. Fast forward to 2 weeks ago, Medtronic reports just another earnings beat. Management giving incredibly bullish forecasts for their 2020 fiscal year. Even better, Omar Ishrak predicted accelerating revenue growth. That's ARG. Thanks to the launch of all these new products he told us about in January. In the end, the tax and foreign exchange issues, the worries there, they amounted to nothing. But Medtronic's terrific pipeline paid off. Since the interview, the stock is up 16%. I am so glad I pounded the table, but I'm so angry at those stupid analysts who thought that Omar had nothing good to say. Just yesterday, a bunch of analysts just decided to get on board. Thanks for nothing. Wells Fargo upgraded the stock to a buy, citing the company's terrific late-stage pipeline. We see Medtronic as accelerating growth story, trading at a steep discount to peers, he says. Thanks. Credit Suisse hosted a bull versus bear lunch and found the attendees to be generally constructive of Medtronic, with just a few bears to be found. You know when this research would have been really helpful? In January, when there were bears everywhere and the stock was trading at $82. Now it's at 96 and change. If you listen to our interview with Omar Ishrak, not only was that gain gettable, we were saying enough already with the analysts. We know more than they do. We were certainly less cynical. All right, then there's Cypress Semiconductor. How about this one, right? The chip maker with a stock that's been hammered because of the worries about end markets like autos. On April 25th, the company reported a nice upside surprise and the stock rallied 7%, but it had more room to run. The next day, we spoke to the CEO, Hossein El-Khoury. I don't know if you liked him. I think he's a real straight shooter. He explained how Cypress had diversified into all sorts of new markets, like the Internet of Things, IoT, also exiting unattractive businesses like flash storage, which is in free fall. Basically, he told us that Cypress was more proprietary and less commodity than people thought. Oh, it was a great story. He even explained that while he had automobile exposure, which you know we don't like him, he had money, it was still growing, even in this terrible environment. However, then May comes along, the stock gets hammered, falling from $17.30 when we spoke to El-Khoury, down to $15 at its lows just a couple weeks ago. Well, turns out that was an incredible buying opportunity because 2 days ago we learned that Cypress Semi is being acquired by Infineon for $23.85. That represents a 38% premium versus where it was trading at the time of our last interview a little over a month ago when I pounded the table. Hey, how about another example that's pretty familiar with people? Let's talk one that is just in the news constantly, Apple. Now, I know Apple's been a house of pain lately, as it's caught in the crosshairs of the trade wars, China, this new antitrust inquiry. But that doesn't change the fact that if you paid attention when CEO Tim Cook came on our show, you caught not one but two bottoms in Apple. The first time was in May of 2016, when the stock had fallen out of favor over worries about a disappointing iPhone cycle and a slowdown in China. Everyone was telling that Apple's best days were behind it. Carl Icahn, we love him. He'd been a long major shareholder. He dumped the stock and told everyone else who would listen to get out. By the time we spoke to Tim Cook, it had traded down to 93 and change. But he told a very compelling story right here, and Apple spent the next 2.5 years roaring higher, practically in a straight line. The second time was this January. Apple had just pre-announced some terrible numbers, and once again, everybody was freaking out about China. The long knives were out. When we spoke to Tim Cook, that was back to January 8th, the stock had pulled back to 150. And once again, he pretty much called the bottom, telling you to stop focusing so much on iPhone sales and instead start thinking about the Apple's rapidly growing service revenue stream. Stock surged to 215 at its highs last month, and even though it's been clobbered down to 182 in recent weeks, it's still up nearly 21% from when he told you a very compelling story. Sometimes you just need a CEO to explain what the heck is going on related to the company and put it in context. Here's one that is just I have loved. No one's paying attention to. I can't find anyone who's interested. Viva Systems. That's a cloud-based software company that works, other than short sellers, you tell me it was no good. It works in the life sciences industry, which you know is a growth business. Viva CEO Peter Gaster. He's been a regular guest on the show. The last time we spoke to him was in March. He said the company was on track to hit $1 billion in sales 1 year ahead of schedule. That's so hard to get a bill. I hope you caught that interview because Viva reported a true blowout quarter last week. And its stock is now up more than 33% since we had Gaster. Gaster's a mild-mannered, terrific guy. Bingo! Here's the bottom line. You're really doing yourself a disservice if you tune out during our CEO interviews. A lot of news is made here, and if you pay attention, you could often identify some terrific opportunities. I'll think about a Coupa Software, an Okta, the Zscale, the Zendesk. Oh, these are all working. But still, before you do, I insist that you do some homework. Let's go to Jeff in Pennsylvania. Jeff!
Booyah, Jim, from State College, Pennsylvania, the home of the famed Penn State Nittany Lions.
Thank you for that running back. Let's go.
Yes, sir. Hey, my question concerns Starwood Property Trust, ticker symbol STWD.
Yeah.
You had them on the show a while back, and you sparked my interest. I did my homework and due diligence and bought an initial position in December at about $20 a share.
Okay. Jeff, I need you to hold on to it. It's Barry Stern like this, so we got to get Barry back on. But he's a breath of fresh air. What a smart guy. I think it's great. You got that yield, 8% yield. You're up a couple of smackers. That's just a good stock. That's great income stock for people who want one income. I trust that guy. I think he's money. All right. Look, listening to CEO interviews on Mad Money, it can be incredibly lucrative for investors. Just be sure to strike a balance between skepticism and credulity. All right, we got a lot more Mad Money. Can an investment in and a plan keep your portfolio connected to profits? Talk about listening to an interview. I'm talking with the CEO. Then dealing with fears around the trade wars with China and antitrust investigations, I'll tell you why it's more important than ever to know why the customer is always right. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer.
Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
We take a shot at that. McDonald's, Wendy's, okay. Beyond Meat. Okay,
yes.
Focus. I try to get him to focus on the good economy, but no, he keeps insisting on the other 96%.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
as I told you earlier in the show, when we bring CEOs on this program, it pays to listen to what they have to say. For example, last December, we spoke to the head of a cloud-based software company called Anaplan, which helps businesses with forecasting and financial planning. He told a really compelling story, and guess what? Since then, the stock has given you a 61% monster gain, and that includes an 18% run on Tuesday of last week after the company shot the lights out with a fantastic beat and raise quarter. As much as I hate to chase stocks that have run already, I think this one is more to run. So let's check in with Frank Calderoni. He's the chairman and CEO of Anaplan to get a better read on how his company's doing, where it's headed. Mr. Calderoni, welcome back to Mad Money. Good to see you, Frank. Have a seat. Good to see you. Now, people don't realize I have known Frank for a long time because he was CFO of Cisco and of Red Hat, two companies you know that I am very enamored of. Red Hat going to be swallowed up by IBM. I saw you last year, and you said, I've got a good one. I'm on Anaplan. I thought you were going to be the CFO. You're the CEO. What's it like to go to CFO to CEO? And what are you doing so right that you have accelerating revenue growth already?
Well, Jim, it's been a great opportunity. I mean, I've been in the company over 2 years now. And just to kind of see how we've progressed over that time frame has been phenomenal. It goes into the great employees, great partners, and also great customers, I think. And we're in a great space. The whole finance, if you look at connected planning, it's in a space that really hasn't been addressed in such a long time. So a tremendous amount of opportunity for us.
How can you help companies get visibility that have limited visibility?
You know, having been in this profession for so many years, getting information has been a challenge for so long. I've dealt with it in numerous, in some of the examples that you mentioned before, the company is part of. So what we do is we allow the kind of the connection of data, people, and plans within an enterprise, right? So it's not just financial planning, what we call connected planning, so enterprise planning. So planning that occurs in finance, but also in sales, in supply chain, in HR, as well as
in all of the cloud, there's different verticals, all of those.
Exactly, right? So think about bringing all that together within one platform, which is very unique, that allows that full connection. So you're getting real-time information at the hands of those that need to make decisions. And then, therefore, it also helps them make those decisions and then measure their progress toward what they intended to accomplish. And that's where the value comes in, right? So is it a reduction in supply chain or it's in basic process? Is it a reduction in cost? Is it more intelligence? Is it better prediction about the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I saw Workday bought a company very similar to what I think you guys do. Where they do some planning. My wife's on the board of Bucknell. She picked those guys a little before. But it does seem like there
I should go and talk to her.
Well, look, she's fungible. But it does seem they're the only two companies. I don't see a lot of companies in your vertical.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, if you think about, the first thing I think that's happening here is the whole digitization.
Right.
That's occurring.
And we had Mark on last night talking about that.
Exactly.
Sales,
so I think that's a big wave that's happening across enterprise. And so I think that's now encouraging the need for some of the application that we have. And I think what sets us up, which is unique, is kind of what I said, which is we're across the enterprise.
Right.
As a platform, which allows that, the togetherness of the data, people, and plans.
Well, you do work for VMware. Now, I know the stock's been weak of late, but they're very smart guys. So they chose you, and you're able to help them do what?
So they work with us in the sales organization.
Okay.
So how they manage all the territories that they assign to the reps, right? So they have a large population. That's all done in Anaplan. Gives them all the intelligence as to what's really happening, forecasting, and things like that. So it's providing them with a tremendous amount of intelligence to manage their business.
I'm used to companies saying they got a flywheel going, and I like that, although rarely do I really see the flywheel. You use the term honeycomb. Explain that to me.
So I thank you for picking that up. Yeah. I love it. So when we have a land and expand model.
Right.
And so the beauty about the platform is that it's not a prepackaged application. Okay. It's one that is customized to our customers' needs. So we'll start in a particular area of finance or a particular area of sales, and then we start to expand in other parts. So it allows them to connect their process. And so the honeycomb is like the first use case is a one of the honeycombs, and then you connect the honeycombs.
Got it.
And when you think about it across the enterprise, it's sort of like what we did in, back in the time of doing end-to-end process mapping.
Yes, yes.
This is a form of end-to-end process mapping, leveraging a technology platform that brings it all together and drives value for the company.
You did something. Usually I'm so afraid of companies that invest. They say, it's an investment year. How are you able to have the investment? You did, you talked about that throughout the call. And also be able to hit the numbers.
I think we're early in the space.
Okay.
So it's important to make the investment. I said this when I joined Anaplan a few years ago, back at the time we were private, going to the investors. And saying that I saw a tremendous amount of opportunity and I want to invest. And so the investment is really in the go-to-market as well as in the technology.
Right.
Right. That's the secret sauce that we have. So invest in that so we can scale. And that's what we've been doing. And the investment is allowing us to drive growth. I mean, this past quarter, 57%
growth. 47% revenue, sub-growth 48%. These are remarkable numbers. And what I think, I've known you as a winner wherever you've been. And I don't think that the run the stock had necessarily is equal to all the good things that are happening at your company.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. Your endorsement means a lot.
Oh, you're terrific, Frank. That's Frank Calderoni, Chairman and CEO of Anaplan. Been a winner everywhere he is. This one's a great one. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time! It's time for the lightning round! And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Ski! Time for the lightning round! I'm starting with Nicholas in Connecticut. Nicholas!
Hi, Jim. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I'm a long-time viewer, first-time caller. I have to say, I love your show, my friend.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about a stock, mRNA, Moderna. It's been getting crushed lately. Should I buy, sell, or hold?
You know, I met them when I was at the J.P. Morgan conference, and healthcare, I thought it was terrific. So I'm going to tell you to stick with it. It is speculative. I like them very much. Dave in Ohio. Dave!
Booyah!
Booyah.
I never miss class when Professor Kramer is at the podium.
Holy cow, man. I take that as an endorsement.
Conference calls and action alerts.
Thank you. Thank you for subscribing and being a member of the club. We got a big call next week. What's going on?
Say, I grew up in the shadow of the greatest roller coaster park in the world, and as a young man, even worked there. In 2012, the stock was on your radar, and I bought into it. After a double, it started a slight decline, and I sold out my basis in January of 2018. It's continued its slow decline, but is now a high yielder at 7%+. Jim, should I continue to have fun? FUN.
Oh, Cedar Fair. Yeah, I like Cedar Fair. I know. Look, the group is down. Six Flags is a totally different. I like this much more than Six Flags. I think Six Flags is bringing them all down, though. Let's go to Gary in Kentucky. Gary.
Hey, Jim. How are you? Big Louisville, Kentucky. Booyahs to you, sir.
Man, once a year, that place is dynamite. What's going on?
It's fantastic. Hey, buddy, I've been in MRTX, Mirati Therapeutics, since July of 17 at $4. It's pushing $100 now.
Yeah, but you know, they did that thing with Amgen and ASCO. It was just killer. Now, look, you got that price. You got to take
sell.
Please take your basis out. Play with the house's money. But that was really good news they got this weekend. How about we go to Dave in North Carolina? Dave!
Booyah! From Charlotte, North Carolina, the Queen City.
I thought it was the Queen City. Sometimes I get it confused with the Rose City down the block. What's going on?
There you go. Hey, I want to get your take on Carvana, CVNA.
Carvana and CarMax are the only two car companies that are related to that industry
that I like.
I think you got a winner, but it is a growth stock, and you got to take a long-term view. Paresh in New Jersey. Paresh.
Hey, Jim. Booyah.
Wow, man, that took a lot of energy. What's going on?
I try to listen to you so every night. XNL club member from last couple of years.
Yes.
You are the best.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a couple good stocks, doing some good stuff. Thank you. What's going on?
Well, my stock is AGN. You recommend to buy that, and then you recommended to sell too, but I made a mistake.
We got burned in that. We own that, and if you remember, for Action Alerts, you got that Pfizer bid, and we hung on, which is why I say don't be an arbitrageur. Finally cut the losses. I still don't like it at 126. I still don't like it. You need growth in order to get a drug stock rolling. I need to speak to Paul in Rhode Island, please, Paul.
Hey, Jim. Third time caller, long time fan.
First time, long time. What's up?
11 years, yes.
Wow.
What's your long-term forecast for the cybersecurity company Fortinet, symbol FTN?
I don't know why Fortinet is not doing better. Now, Proofpoint is one of my faves, and one that I really am getting hurt on for the charitable trust is Palo Alto Networks. That really good run, and then bingo, we need to hear from management. I don't know what's going on. Nikesh Arora, come on. But, you know, I don't know what's going on with that one in particular. I need to go right now to Kathy in Illinois. Kathy.
Hi, Jim.
Kathy.
I just wanted to thank you. You helped me put my kids through college.
There you go. Not bad. Thank you very much for that.
But anyways, I was wondering about Chevron with all this thing with electric cars.
I think Chevron's a good company, but I am no longer recommending fossil fuel stocks on the show. Now, why am I doing that? Because the millennial fund managers just don't like it. And they are going to inherit the darn earth. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Forget about the on-again, off-again nature of the Fed and the president for a second. When you're evaluating individual companies, the two most important questions are often who is the customer and how's the customer doing? The answer, it depends. In the case of Salesforce, the customer's doing great. They're placing huge orders year over year. And that's how the company grew its cash flow at 34%. Hey, that's how they got 25% growth in the Americas, 27% growth in Asia, 32% growth in Europe, all in constant currency. How about China issues? Nope. Salesforce does almost no business in China. Now, contrast that with Skyworks Solutions, SWKS, the semiconductor company that pre-announced a huge shortfall last night. The problem is Skyworks used to get 12% of its sales from Huawei, which has now been blacklisted. Not their fault, but it still hurts. I think it can get worse before it gets better. Skyworks also has a lot of Apple business, and I'm worried that that could be actually a liability. Last night, Tim Cook told CBS News he doesn't think China will target Apple. Well, I'm much more concerned about the United States targeting Apple because they do so much manufacturing in the People's Republic, and we know our president doesn't like that for, you know, hey, listen, to each his own, I guess. And that's why Skyworks and every other company with a ton of exposure to China has become suspect, even as I swear by Liam Griffin, as a great CEO. But what could the Skyworks CEO do about a customer like Huawei that is suddenly on a presidential blacklist? Plus, I'm betting we'll start hearing that the Chinese economy has gotten weaker. Of course, weaker is still a lot better than being blacklisted, but it's not good. The only American company that I think is doing really fine in China is Estee Lauder, and they're in the consumer packaged goods space. So that's about what you'd expect in a slowdown with customers worldwide, including China, in the selfie generation. The issue, though, is this. Who are your customers? Mark Benioff, again, the visionary co-CEO of Salesforce, talked about how some of his clients are worried about tariffs, but that's forcing them to step up their digital spending to protect their flanks. And on the conference call, co-CEO Keith Block cited a source that only 20% of the enterprises out there are digitized. That's a staggeringly low figure that indicated Salesforce could still have an enormous amount of room to grow. Remember, as Mark reminds us, every business needs to identify its customers. That's easy for Salesforce, their potential customers, or anybody who wants to migrate to the cloud. And it isn't that hard for a company like Skyworks either. They make semiconductors, mainly for the communications market. Think everything related to cell phones. However, Benioff was careful to point out that this is one reason big tech has gotten in so much trouble in Washington. Some of these companies have forgotten who the real customers are. Mark called out Facebook for selling out its users. Hey, they're the real customers long before almost anyone else. While he didn't specifically mention Amazon, Apple, or Alphabet, I think Washington will have to ask the same questions to these companies. Does Apple make too much money off the App Store extracting monopoly profits from its customers? Does Alphabet profit from the fact that it knows way too much about its user base? Does Amazon compete against its own customers? These issues haunt the tech titans. But they don't haunt Salesforce, or any of the other cloud kings for that matter. And that's why we're paying up for the cloud stocks and dumping the others. After the disappointment that was Skyworks and the antitrust investigations of big tech, maybe knowing who your customer is has become more important than knowing how your customer is doing. Although the great ones know both. Stick with Cramer. A company that I really have come to like is Stitch Fix, and that's Katrina Lake. She has done such a magnificent job, and they blew out the quarter at the end of the day. It reminds you that technology of all forms, but particularly digital, is still the place to be. And we learned that from Salesforce last night, didn't we? I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'd find it just for you, right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I'll see you tomorrow.